Today, we're joined by e-commerce legend Danny Buck. Danny is most well known for starting Crafted, one of the world's most known men's jewelry brands. He started off in uni, selling cheap Hugo Boss wallets and making up to £1,000 a week. Fast forward a few years, he's done an MBO at 22 years old and he's employing over 100 people. Danny would go on to create a whole host of consumer brands under his holding company, Brand Builder, and would generate hundreds of millions of pounds of revenue over the following years. Danny's story is truly inspirational. So sit back, relax, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Get money.
One for the money.
$350 Swiss.
Zurich, 23.
Two for the show.
Two and eight soul.
Get it, get ready and order.
Go!
Welcome to Mavericks.
I want to start by reading out a few lines to you, a few contrasting lines to you.
Okay.
You don't know where this is going.
Yeah.
I'm going to start from the top. $120 million revenue for Brand Builder, your holding company.
Yeah.
Line number one. In 2017, almost down and out, after you sold your stake in a previous business that went into administration and you didn't get paid out. On track to do 30 million bucks this year for Crafted. £14,000 starting salary in customer support. Today, over 500,000 investors in fine wine and an MBO at 22 years old, scaling that business to over 100 staff. Now, you're a young guy. That is a lot of stuff crammed into a small space of time. So I kind of want to start with a story that I heard about you, which was selling imitation Hugo Boss wallets at university.
Honestly, that was me that told you that story.
Take me back to that.
Those are nice. Thanks for those points. I'm obviously well researched there. That's kind of like this is your life, hearing them backwards. So the story about the wallets, I was at university. So even going further back than that, when I was a kid, my dad took me to car boot sales and we would buy and sell things. And that was kind of my early introduction to commerce, not even Eli e-commerce, just general sales. And it went through stages. I would buy from hair wholesalers, like hair accessory sort of wholesalers, and try and sell them on eBay and things like that. But when I was at uni, I would have my job. I worked at Man United as a waiter for about 5 years. But it paid enough for uni, but it didn't pay like what I wanted. So I was like online gambling or like playing online poker. I was like trying to find ways to make more money.
Hustling, yeah.
Yeah, just whatever I could do. Because, I mean, you'd go out and drink at uni and stuff like that, but I wasn't like out every night. Like I needed something to kind of stimulate it. So
what did your parents do? Were they in business or?
No, they weren't. Both of them worked for companies. Mum worked for Midland Bank. It would obviously transition to HSBC for 40 years, I think. She'll kill me for that. And my dad was similar. He worked for Kellogg's and the two of them retired. Are retired, and that was there. They were career people. So they put me through uni. They paid for me to go to Liverpool Uni. And whilst I was there, I decided I was going to sell things on eBay. Didn't know what I was going to do. And I saw that wallets were selling quite well. It's like a trending item. So I'd buy, I think it was Thailand, my friend, really nice guy called Michael Galvin. He would buy replica football shirts from Thailand. So I was like, can you get wallets? And he said, yeah, what sort of ones? I was like, Hugo Boss ones. They look like they're doing really well. So I'd put them on and I'd say, genuine imitation Hugo Boss wallets. So I was like, what the hell does genuine imitation mean? Basically just not saying
fakes. Good quality fakes.
Yeah, exactly. And they were selling for 40 quid. I think they cost me 8 quid. And they would do, you get the odd one back saying, this is real, blah, 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 and you get bad feedback score.
Was eBay the kind of the main place to do
that? That was e-commerce, really. Yeah. In my world, I think it was actually the first real one. That was like, I think you can make your own stores, but nobody was really into that. So you had the marketplace eBay, and we were doing some really good numbers at Christmas. And I was living with three other people, and I wrote them in and said, if you want to get £1 an item, take these to the post office for me, because I like the listing of
learning 3PL.
Exactly, that's it. That was the first 3PL, yeah. But I mean, it's kind of lazy. I could have kept the cash. What I like to do was optimize the listings, manage customer support, obviously change the images, manage the fulfillment, all that sort of stuff. And then outsource the bit that I didn't really want to do, package it all up and take it to the post office. I forget the number now, but it's somewhere between £4,000, £5,000, something like that at Christmas. And that was a lot of cash. Obviously that's not all profit, but it was just having that money. It was amazing just at Christmas that young.
Were you doing any uni work or not?
I did not vibe with uni at all. Yeah. No, it didn't work for me. I have a view on uni. It's not that it's not the right view for everybody. You want to be a doctor, you want to go into a certain career path, it's perfect. And I think you should try and get in the best university you possibly can for that. But for me, I went to Liverpool. I partied, got, I think, something like 41% attendance in my first year.
Yeah.
Ended up getting a 2-2, and it didn't matter what I got. I could have failed. It wouldn't have mattered at all, I think.
So. I think about, it must be 70 to 80% of our guests that have come on didn't go to uni. And,
really?
And many of whom wouldn't recommend their kids going to uni. So it's interesting you say that.
Yeah, I just, I did. Do you know, I actually said something on LinkedIn recently. There was two assignments whilst I was at university. So the syllabus was totally out of date. There was two assignments. I got 9% or 7 or 9% and 11% on the, I think it was 7, you know, it was, I remember the lady as well. It was on advertising. And the future of advertising. And I wrote about TiVo. Do you remember TiVo coming out? It was the first on pause. It's like an actual TV, I think. It wasn't a box or something, but you could basically pause live TV.
Yeah.
And then fast forward. So it had a hard drive. And I said, that's going to kill TV advertising. And she totally flunked it anyway. And it's not totally come true, but it's nearly come true with Sky and Fast.
Yeah, of course.
Not watching TV ads as much as you wanted. So I got 7% for that, and 11% for we had an assignment to brand a alcoholic drink, and I did hang under beer, a non-alcoholic drink, as an alternative. For
where was this? What year was this?
So it was 18. It's 20 years. 20 years ago.
Yeah. So you were right.
Yeah.
You were right.
So that was really, it was actually embarrassing as well, because we had to read it out in class and stuff like that. And she just said, no, like, really, like, put it down. She's like, you've not got the assignment. It's supposed to be about this. And it was to do with branding, but it was to do with an alcoholic drink and then where you're going to market the pubs. And I just thought a non-alcoholic beer would be an alternative for people that didn't want to drink. Because I was trying to think different to what everyone else would do. They'd do like a wine or a gin or whatever. I don't think gin was popular then, but yeah. And that kind of gave me this whole perception of uni, like leaving it thinking, and looking back on it now, that was actually a waste of time, that syllabus. They were teaching about radio ads and not internet marketing whilst I was there, but Facebook, show my age, Facebook started whilst I was at university.
Yeah.
So everybody in the year is using it, like becoming familiar with it, looking at this as a way of communicating, which obviously then became advertising.
Yeah.
But nobody in the university was teaching this. They were teaching
legacy stuff,
billboard stuff and whatever, different forms of advertising, different forms of marketing. It gave you some, but I learned a lot more at college about business than I did at university.
Yeah. As it was coming towards the end of university, were you like actively thinking about jobs? Were you thinking about doing the eBay thing going forward? Like, what was the...
So I'll say this a lot through this throughout my journey and through this podcast. My parents, obviously, they shape you what you think your future should be. And what the right thing to do is you leave uni, you get a job. Yeah. So if I left uni, started looking for a job. And I thought I would get a job of like 25,000 sort of thing. I'm a graduate. I'm going to get a job. Got a 2-2, but I didn't get a 2-1, but I've been to uni, so I'll get a job. Didn't get any. I got offered $12,000 a year plus a sales commission by a directory company.
Yeah.
I turned that one down. And then my brother-in-law offered me a job doing customer support, which was $16,000. And I was getting to the point, it was going on a bit sort of thing that I was like, I was still working as a waiter. I was like, right, I'll just take this, see where it goes. It was maternity cover for a lady that was obviously having a baby. And that was it. That's where the customer support started. Yeah. Yeah. So.
So it was, did it come directly from your brother-in-law? Was it?
Yeah. So he just said, there's a job coming up. It's customer support if you're interested. And I didn't want customer support, but I was getting a bit bored of being a waiter and not having, because it was a 0-hour sort of thing.
Yeah,
like 2 days here, 4 days there, and like there was no real structure.
What did the business do? What was the?
So it was a software company. They do blood tracking solutions for the NHS.
Okay.
seriously boring.
Yeah.
And they had a web division as well. So the web division would create websites again, thinking this is nearly, yeah, sort of 17, 18 years ago. And they would create these called like CMSs, like content management systems, so you could customize your website yourself, all that sort of stuff. So we'd sell those, and we then started doing e-commerce. So we'd have a, you'd sell them a website, and then you'd sell them a shop, and it wasn't even on the same like domain. It was like shop dot some separate software. And as I would do the support for this, but when I started to learn the business, I'd like ask more questions, like, what about, could you upsell them this? And like the salesman started to come back out again, and I started to see where I could sell. And I found myself doing sales. So I was like upselling hosting packages or upselling extra support credits or anything like that. And the management team there spotted that I was doing this and thought I was better in a sales role. So they moved me out of customer support, replaced me.
Yeah.
I started doing more, I think it was, there was like a grant from, really testing my brain is, there's like a government grant from the EU, I think it was, that would give 40% of the costs for an e-commerce website. So
they were kind of part funding it for...
Yeah. So if it was net 10 grand, it was like a grand, I think.
Yeah.
They would give 400 quid towards it.
Yeah.
So it's a great sales tool. We'd go in and go, look, we've got this grant. It should be 1,000. It's only going to cost you 600 quid. You get to sell wine on the internet or...
Yeah, sure.
Sell clothes on the internet.
Whatever. Sure.
And it was convincing traditional retail, some people that have got shops in, it was Liverpool sort of area, to go online and start doing it. But they... A lot of these people knew that they needed it. It was right at the very start of e-commerce and they understood it. And I think it made the job easy. It was an easy sell. It worked quite well. I ended up getting commission on these and going past my 25,000 quite early, within maybe a year or two. But I saw internet marketing coming up fast behind us and we were getting left behind. No one was doing it and it was the next sell. So like for me to hit my sales target, say it was 10,000 a month or something, I would have to sell 10 websites. But I had this concept that if we could get people on retainers with marketing or retainer-based services, whether it's support, then that 10 grand could be done within 3 months.
So I mentioned when you were previously building websites, that was kind of a big one-off and then maybe small monthlies from that point onwards?
Yeah, is
that
40 quid. Or something
right.
So the sales side was harder to hit on with those. But when I saw there was a company in Liverpool doing SEO.
Yes.
And that was brand new, SEO and PPC. And we're like, right, we need to sell these services. Did a big case to the managing director at the time saying, this is what I think we should do. We need to hire one person, get a part-time person to do this. I'll do the account management. And he just said, no, not interested, not at all. And he said, we just keep doing our website stuff. We're a software company. We're not doing marketing.
Why do you think in hindsight, do they just not believe in the kind of the future of where the internet was going or what?
I mean, that guy fucked up big time. So fast forward to a few years, I saw them. I think the company really messed up. They went to administration, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But
that was a bad mistake, not just because of me. It was the attitude of that there's something might be changing, there's a future coming.
Yeah.
And it was just a closed door.
Yeah.
I don't like anybody that's like that. I think you've got to embrace it. It might not be for you, but I think you've got to embrace anything like technological that might be a change and just understand it. I think you can't close doors like that. So what happened was I and my pride hurt a little bit. So I was pissed off. So I said, fuck it, I'm going to leave. I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to back myself here. And I told Graham, who's my brother-in-law, about it. And he said, I think I want to do my own business as well.
Yeah.
So, but he was quite high up at the time. So the two of us leaving at once forced their hand to say, right, why don't you just buy the division? Because we were...
Was that their initial reaction?
We were five staff.
That was their initial reactions. Why don't you buy us?
Not straight away. No, the managing director was a bit of a hothead. So he like hit the roof, but his dad was the chairman and his dad seemed a bit more understanding, a bit more thoughtful and pulled it together. And he basically said... Let's try and work a deal. But what we did was we amortized the price.
Yeah.
So we got the funding. So I think I've talked about this before, but we basically, it was a six-figure sum. We borrowed off our parents, my parents and Graham's parents, and then we bank loaned the rest. And then we bought it. That was the management buyout. We took the staff as well.
And so when you bought it, what was the state of that division? Like contractor revenue?
Yeah, exactly.
Clients?
Yeah.
Like what
host,
like?
The hosting contracts were about 100K. So what we did was we worked out a deal where we paid them monthly as well. So we amortized the whole purchase. So it was pretty much, they were getting paid monthly and didn't have to do anything. But from our side, it was pretty much paying its way already. Yeah. You just had to hit the sales target.
Yeah, but it's impressive that like, and maybe if you now kind of look at where Crafted is, it becomes less and less relevant. But like, how old are you at this point? 22.
Yeah, 22.
MBO at 22. That's yes. quite
going
a
on
deal,
to 23.
Right? I think most 22-year-olds wouldn't know where to start with an MBO.
I didn't. Yeah. I just did it. You just you learn. You're just like, oh, you can't do that. Okay, so and what do you need for the bank? Oh, you need that. Okay, and then you need what the fuck's a balance sheet? Like, yeah, like so it's all of those. You start to just learn. You have to learn. I think so. We did it, and looking back, I think it sounds better than it is. It's just the thing to us at the time. We're just trying to buy the department.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was just the structure of the deal was the genius in it. Really, was that it. If it all went to shit, we might have had to pay, say, $3,000 a month out of our own cash somewhere.
Yes.
Because we had the contractual revenue from the hosting and support client.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're hitting the sales target, and then we introduced what the business plan was in the first place, the internet marketing.
And did the previous owners have a carry and equity stake in the new business, or was it just clean?
Clean, yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, and that was called WebTies. So that was website, advertise, name. I've always been wanting to try and make a new word so you get the domain name. So that was it. So we got webties.com and we started that. So there was myself, Graham, a designer, developer, and then a maintenance person.
Yeah.
And then that five went to 120 when I left, which was, God, these dates. So I was 30, 8 years ago. No, 31, 7 years ago.
Yeah. So, nine-ish years.
Yeah. It's about 8.5 years, yeah.
What was it like scaling that? Because, you know, again, young guy, owner of a business, scaling to 120 people, like, there's a lot that goes with that. Like, what was it like?
That's the only time in my life I've been relatively, not flashy, but I felt that people weren't taking me seriously because I looked young. So I was going in, and someone who'd been in business for 30 years, and there's a young guy coming in telling him what he should be doing on the internet. And I think I had like a Renault Clio. And I'd like, I need to get a Merc or something. I need to get something which gives me a little bit of credibility that it's good. I think I had a Jag at one stage, and then I felt it's because when I had the Clio, I'd park around the corner because I felt that image doesn't replicate what I'm trying to do. It's really egotistical, but there was a strategy to it. And I hate it when people start saying that you need to buy Rolexes and nice watches to sit in meetings.
Yes.
It's like, well, for that time, because I was so young, I wasn't taken seriously. Yeah. So I'd try it. It was just to get in the door sort of thing, if you know what I mean, because I was judged, definitely. But then when I start to talk and show results, then all that stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I think at that time, that's probably the only time, yeah, probably had a bit of an ego issue. Yeah. But not like... I was like the big dog. It was none of that. It was the other way. It was like, it was damaged. My ego was damaged. I believed in myself.
Was it like the imposter, the classic kind of imposter syndrome, or?
Maybe not imposter syndrome. No, but I'm trying to say it's more, people didn't take me seriously. So how do I get them to take me seriously? Yeah. What do I need? Is there a strategy here? Do I need a nice car or watch or suit or something?
Yeah.
To get them to take me seriously.
Got it.
And that actually in a weird way became our entire strategy. So we would get people to come to us through inbound marketing, through results and case studies. So they were like, so none of that existed.
Yes.
When it was cold and I had to like literally drive up and knock on a door, or I had to phone somebody and say, can I come over now and speak to you? And that it was that part that people weren't taking me seriously.
Yeah.
In the after part, when they'd go to our website and they'd seen we've increased someone's traffic by 16,000%
or whatever. Yeah.
That was easy, because then they come to the door like, I want mine. I need to increase my traffic. We ended up doing a lot of fashion, so a lot of the fast fashion brands that you'll know of, a lot of the guys that are kind of, I think they're going through a sale sort of stage now, they're falling away, the fast fashion guys.
Okay, yeah.
I won't say the clients specifically, but when you've got one, they all want to work with you.
Yeah.
So it was that was easy to kind of become an expert in that sector, and we ended up being an e-commerce specialist, really, in the whole thing. And the best part of all this, and I've said this again before, is I got to learn the ins and outs of hundreds of e-commerce businesses. And the genius was you'd have some people doing 20 million turnover with 20 staff, outsourcing all sorts of stuff. We were the digital strategy. So they had no marketing department other than influencer marketing staff. And we were responsible. It was our digital strategy. So me and our, I think it was about 25 in the digital marketing team. And it was our result. So if we did a good job, they made a shitload of money. We would get paid $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
And there was a disconnect for me in that. And that.
What was the business doing at the time? What was like?
When I left, it was doing 4 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's we were actually selling as well. We didn't sell. One of the reasons, so I did a deal where we bought an app company and we brought the app company into the company for the sale. So it was a strategic move because they had clients like PlayStation and a lot of agencies, they sold off their client base. Mm-hmm. So somebody else buying them, how can I sell stuff into PlayStation? And we knew that move would be quite good. So I brought them this company on, and there was four directors, four shareholders at the time. Myself and Graham were still the majorities. But the idea was when we got to sale, if we got the right price, we'd split it. So it would go 25s each. But on paper, I had 37.5% when I left. And we brought on the wrong CEO, basically. And when that person got equity, it started to change for me. The business started to change. So there's a couple of reasons. I didn't like the company which I owned, and I wanted to leave. I didn't like it. I wasn't happy.
Why was that? Because it started to change. What was changing?
It went extremely corporate. There was hires, which I didn't know. And you'd walk in one day and there'd be people you don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel like my company.
Yes.
And I've realized as a character, I don't want to own a massive amount of staff. Let's see if this changes in the future. But I don't want to have a massive amount of staff.
Yeah. Because it's interesting because Crafted is multiple times bigger than that business. And yet,
yeah,
I know you feel very differently about that business as you do. So
yes.
Was it comparatively, you know, smaller business?
Yeah, it's... So the alternative, so you've got one where we had a big office for all the team, and you'd go there every day. And I went to this place every day for 8 years. And I thought, what the fuck have I done there? Because I'd have like one or two holidays a year.
Yeah.
And we'd always go to the same place. And I think for about 5 years in a row, we went to the same, they were almost like the same 5 years.
Yes, yeah.
And I kind of just woke up.
Were you happy at the time or not? Objectively, were you?
I thought I was a baller. I had so much money.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I just didn't. I wasn't spending.
Yeah.
I think I just wasn't spending anything.
But you were a baller, but were you happy? Like, were you going home at the end of every day and thinking, I love what I do, or not at all?
Only the last year, probably.
Yeah.
I didn't. Because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the clients. When you get a good relationship with a client where you can go out for drinks with them, it's fantastic. I'd love that. What was hard was the sales target was 330,000. And that was me. There was no sales department. That was me. Obviously, the stature of the business, the reputation of the business, all that sort of stuff brought clients in. But if I didn't sit in those meetings and close those deals, then go into sale, we couldn't go backwards. Mm-hmm. So I think it was high pressure, which I liked. I like that. I like because you're motivated to go into work. You feel it. But I think the worst part of it is just the monotony of like, right, January the 1st, go sign up 10 clients. Mm-hmm. February the 1st, go, like it just reset. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
We had some marketing retainers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, we still had to sign a certain amount of website clients.
Yeah. When did the CEO, I suppose you're saying that some of your clients who were working with the fast fashion brands, you know, 20 million quid top line with maybe, I don't know, 20 people or whatever, 15 people. When did that seed start in your head of maybe I could be doing that? If you were providing the digital strategy and digital marketing, when did that seed really start growing that I could actually do this myself?
There was one particular client that was a... women's accessories business, in shoes, and we had a fantastic relationship. I won't say just because I haven't spoke to them before. We had a great relationship. There was four brothers, and they were doing great. Yeah. They're doing brilliant numbers. And it's just like, how we were the marketing team for them. My, the guy, so who we brought in as CEO, fell out with them.
Yeah.
And they left as a client. And I was annoyed that we'd lost them as a client. They're paying us 250 grand a year, something like that. And because they were deemed an unprofitable client, I don't think so in the end, because they gave us a lot of base turnover.
Yes.
But the client, it was a good client anyway. They were making, I think it was like 17 million or something like that. There was a small team. And I was just thinking, I could do this. Because I was in there, because it was quite a big client for us. I think they were third biggest client. And I was in their offices, and they were like, right, how are we growing? And I'd give a digital strategy about how they'd grow. They had their team, they had their products, they had a great Instagram. Like, there's all those things which helped. Obviously, like, you know, within marketing, it's, you can do something, do the same strategy for one client and another, and it won't work for another one. Like, that was a good business, so it was easy in a way. But it was our innovation, our digital strategy, like, what are we doing this year? Right, this is what I think we need to do. Is social media's growing or whatever. Like, oh, I think we need to look at this and some of these types of generic pages that we should be advertising on. And when it worked, you know, they wouldn't want to up their retainers and stuff like that because it's been signed off. But I think at that point, I started thinking, right, there's way more money on the other side of the fence. I'm on the wrong side of the fence here. I should be trying to go into the retail side.
But I imagine with agency, there's like cash flow is actually pretty good.
Cash flow's great. Yeah, there was no problem with our wages. We were all on big wages because most there's no stock.
Right, this is it.
Time, yeah, this is it. The stock, this is it. Yeah. So the margins were great.
Yeah.
But
the big prize was...
Yeah, there's no exit.
Yeah.
There's no exit, really. We tried to sell, and I got offered like half what the other guys got offered because I wanted to leave straight away. I was like, these guys are new. Like, these two guys are new. Like, I get it for you, Graham, you're going to stay on, but like, why are these guys getting more than me? They've only been here a couple of years. Like, yeah. So I just rejected it, and that kind of just, that was the end.
Soured the whole. Yeah. So then, like, I think maybe this is kind of good segue into 2017. So this, this kind of sale of your shares back to the board, it kind of collapsed, didn't it? Because the company went into administration very shortly after you sold your stock and hadn't been paid. Like, talk to me about that time. That's been pretty tough.
Yeah, it was. So we did the deal. So we're negotiating the deal in the summer of 16, I think. And we agreed that was the price. And it didn't get signed until October. So I left in July, and I played golf with my dad. Basically, I did anything. There was no work. I was in purgatory, basically. It was just limbo. And I think it was the 1st of October. I think it might have been the accounting year when it finished, the financial year. So that got announced. Deal, great. First payment. I was getting paid between July and October, but it was a wage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we agreed the settlement, signed the settlement, sorry, in October. So I got paid in October, paid in November, paid in December, and then got a phone call in January saying they were folding the company.
No prior warning. Didn't expect it.
No, there was things going on. I think they'd had trouble with some, a client was going to sue them. But they did a pre-pack, launched as another company.
Yeah.
Looking back now, I know exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
The time I was like, oh shit, that's bad for you. But then obviously then to start to think, right, what am I going to do? Yeah. And I was thinking about...
When they started another company, what was it? What were they doing? Same thing?
Yeah, same thing. Just marketing, not development.
Right.
So obviously the clients transitioned, staff transitioned,
yeah.
But there was no bills to me, no bills to the lawyers for the... I think they had a court case for the other one. Stuff like that. It's my brother-in-law. We've got a great relationship now. It's not that. And in a weird way, like, I've done all right. So I think if I would have done badly, I might have been a bit more sour, but
yes.
I've done all right. So it's kind of, I forgot about it. But yeah, I mean, way over half a million quid, I was out on that. But the worst part was I'm expecting that money to come in. I'd taken debt and spent debt and on stock for the upcoming brand, which was Circular the first. First brand, yeah.
When you've taken out debt now, based on thinking that you had receivables coming in from previous business. quality of life at that stage? Were you like, was it a kind of a flashy? Do you have high outgoings? What was
lived in a semi-detached, had a Jaguar F-Type, which was costing me $1,000 a month.
Yeah,
that was the mortgage plus the Jaguar. The costs were about $5,000 a month, but I was getting paid like, do you think the sort of last 4 years until this moment, it was fine. There was no problem. That wasn't a worry at all. But when that hits, I've got $5,000 a month to pay for my personal outgoings, but then I've got the debt to pay as well. And that's the point where things started to get tricky. So we just had to come up with a solution because there was no way at all Circular was going to be profitable in its first year.
When did Circular start? In the kind of timeline?
Circular
towards the end of...
November of 16, I think, we did a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
We got funded 20... I think we were going for 20,000. We got 25,000, which was great, but because on stock. So like that went on stock and we had an okay November, December, nothing crazy. It's like, it's a bad time to launch November because it was Black Friday anyway, and you don't want to launch and then go in sales straight away. But I wasn't a retailer, so I was learning these things in a crash course. And we just had, once that news hit, it was just a meteor. We had to really rethink everything. And our first year of doing Circular, and it launched in November, but its first calendar year, was just changed. So I had deals agreed with influencers. Mm-hmm. I had about 10 to 12 influencers for ease. Let's say it's £1,000 a month. We were paying each person. We'd committed to 12 months. We're like, oh fuck, we've got no, now like we haven't got cash flow anymore because I'm not getting this amortized payout. So we're just in the shit. It was just an absolute shit show. Yeah, we had to really rethink. I got a £50,000 loan against the house, which we used just to pay the agreed contracts, which we'd done, trying to get Circular to make some money, but it was making revenue, but it wasn't making profit.
Do you have any of those moments where you're kind of lying in bed thinking like, what the hell has happened? Like rewind 2 years, healthy salary, driving around a nice F-Type, mortgage being paid off, happy days. Did you ever have any of those moments where you just think like, what the hell am I doing? Like questioning the whole, you know, the whole process? Not really.
No, there's only one moment where I just thought, I can't get this to work. Because I've always had self-belief. So like, no matter what, I've always kind of backed myself that I will fix something. I'll fix it. I'll come up with something. And at the end, we always said, at the end of the day, we've still got some equity in the house. Like if it does go to shit, we can just sell the house and that'll pay off some of the debt. Like it wasn't enough. We were in a negative on our personal balance sheet at this point. But I don't know. I had faith. I would turn it around, but I thought it was going to be Circular. It turned it around. It was the other things which helped to turn it around. So at this point, there's no way Circular was going to make any profit to do it. So what I could have done is I could have cut all the advertising costs, all the agreed influencers, could bring that down, and it could have made maybe £500 a month profit. Obviously nowhere near the outgoings and the debt. So it couldn't service its own costs. So, and that was the plan. The plan was to lose money, learn, and create a business which kind of jumps a few years. So that stopped. I think in February, I was like, right, I'll do consultancy. So a couple of my old clients phoned them up saying, look, this situation's happened, doing a bit of consultancy. Do you want any? I got offered a job by one of our old clients, £300,000 a year. And I said no. Took me down to London, bought me this.
How tempted were you? Very tempted or not?
Really, really tempted. Yeah. It was the character I don't think would have worked for me.
Yeah.
He was, he owned, I think he's, I can't say too much, but yeah, it was a billionaire, basically, father. So he wanted me to set up a web division for him. And it would have been a job. And at this point, I was entrepreneurial. I wanted to create. It wasn't the right environment for me, but it could have been great for a year or two sort of thing. But I chose not to do that. So what I chose to do was do consultancy. So I started to kind of do the personal Instagram stuff, built a profile on Instagram, doing videos of certain things like how to gain more followers by doing this sort of thing and these sort of videos, which were, I think they were like, it wasn't even Instagram stories. It was just a video. It wasn't real. It was really a video, yeah. I think. So I was doing that, recording those. And then I started to get some other clients. So I remember this one guy called Colin, who was like, the best day ever. Like, we'd had like really bad days, and then just this guy signed up and he's paid me, I think it was three sessions of 700 quid each. It's like, that was just the best. I was like, fuck it, at last, I'm like, something. And it was great. And I'd do these sessions with him. I'd coach him. I'd log into his store, help him set up an e-commerce store, all that sort of stuff. So at this point, I was like learning Shopify, and Cirque had been on Shopify. I knew about it, but we didn't do it at the agency. It was Magento we did.
Yeah.
So I was learning all about it. It was dead easy, setting people up. And then I was giving them like this kind of like start, how to start a brand advice. That's what this guy was paying me for. So I realized that my time was then getting taken. I was back to this whole service model I was selling for time.
Agency again versus...
Yeah, but it's like one-man agency.
Yeah.
It was good. We were paying our bills at this point, so the house was covered. And we just decided that it was the right... I couldn't scale. So I couldn't... That was the limit, basically. I could only do that or up my prices. So I invented this kind of digital product called the Brand Builder Plan. So I'd done a couple of other ebooks which I sold for 15 quid, like how to start a fashion brand, 15 quid, all that sort of stuff. And they would sell and you'd make a few hundred quid. But then I came up with this Brand Builder Plan, which was a business plan. Basically, you'd write in on a form, type form, saying, what's your brand? And what are you thinking of? What do you want to do? All this sort of stuff. And they'd give me, it's about 25 questions. So I'd get answers for that. And then that would then, I'd then get that. And then I'd put it into a template, which would take 2 hours maybe. I'd write them a business plan, basically. That was it. And they get it back, and it was great. 250 quid. We were selling 10, 20, whatever of them.
Yeah,
and that was it. So it was like, I was
starting to get the bills again.
Yeah. So I've got the consultancy, got this, and then things started to develop. So as I was doing this whole public thing, I was living this sort of, I mean, it's so cringe now. Because everyone's kind of like this whole like agency lifestyle, you sort of thing, like work where you want, you can like all of that sort of stuff. Because it was true for me. I was actually doing it. I know you get some people that are like, they'll pose outside of someone else's Ferrari. And but I guess in a weird way, I was one of those gurus. But it was.
But I suppose there is a difference, right? Because you did have a successful agency so there is a little bit.
I had experience to share. Yeah, basically. But some of these guys are great. But like, it was one of those. There was actually a means to an end. I needed to make.
Did you like doing it, or did you feel comfortable doing it?
I did. I do miss that side of clients' interaction because they're great and they rely on you. Like, I do like helping people that side. It's more when you get the annoying question like, what business should I start? I'm like, you need to sort that shit. So I'm just thinking in terms of months where we'd get up to. So we'd launched Brand Builders Plans. Yeah. So then at this point we're kind of back to not balling again, but like we're back in a good place where we're not worried about money or not worried about paying our bills. Sorry. So, but there was no contracts with this. This was still, you had to get up in the morning. You had to do some promotion, some
sell, yeah. Da da da, etc.
But so we're doing that, and then throughout all of that backstory, somewhere along the way, we'd planned. It was my mum's 60th, and we'd gone to we went to Mexico. So we'd bought these paid up front in October.
Yeah,
and had it, but then obviously when the time that we went, I think it was March, April. March is a birthday actually. It's March, and we were skint, yeah. But it was all inclusive. Thank God. So but we were totally, totally skint at this point. But whilst we were there, because Amy, I'm working, but Amy's not at this point. So she, you know, we'd given up. She was at the agency as well. We'd given up our lives to start something new. So she didn't want to do circular. She wasn't really into the whole watches thing. She decided that she wanted an e-commerce brand, but something different. So we looked at margins and found jewelry was good. And while she was in Mexico, the idea just hit her off. I think there was something to do with like endangered sea turtles being promoted around Mexico. And it's one signal led to another signal in her brain. And then we came back and she said, I think I'm going to do jewelry that saves sea turtles. It's like, what the fuck? And then we did it. We launched it. We had a sale immediately. We still don't know who, so we don't know how this person bought.
Yeah.
It was... hand on heart, we put the website live and the sale came in and we were like, have you done a test order?
Yeah.
And it wasn't, it was
legit.
What the hell? Like, how did that person even find it? It was like minutes.
I suppose one thing I want to ask you about here is that you'd obviously done a lot of the kind of the digital marketing agency work.
Yeah.
But by this stage, maybe with Circular, but you hadn't really gone to product yet, had you? Product was kind of new. It was like, where were you sourcing from?
Yes.
Did you know how to negotiate? Kind of, how did you know where the right suppliers were? Negotiating kind of, price bands, MOQs, all this kind of
stuff. Yeah, it's all, as you're going through this now, I obviously understand all of that at the time. It's just like, where do I buy watches from?
Right, yeah.
Google, watch suppliers.
Yeah.
Alibaba, right. Okay, Alibaba, message this guy. Just messaged all these people. Someone came back and was like, he had good communication. How much for a sample? We don't do samples. Okay, you're gone. And then he had quite good communication. How much for a sample? And he's like, we can do samples. They cost this, but we take it off your order if you order from us.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so we paid a bit too much for the samples, but then it comes off. And we started working with that guy. And he was great. He was like, was really passionate about watches, would send over all these new designs, all these sorts of things. So, well, because we did a Kickstarter, we designed the watches that we wanted so we could show them the styles.
Right, right.
But because it was kind of like a pre-order, we had cash to buy the first round of stock.
It's interesting, right? Because I think it's something that's probably not spoken about enough. It's just, you don't need to have everything in play. You just have to start. And you start to figure stuff out as you go.
Yeah.
No one when they start knows what they're doing.
No.
So it's kind of cool to hear you say that. And you didn't have the grand plan there from day one and stuff. You were just figuring it out as you went along.
I shared on Instagram my notes, the original notes, and it's just how to sell a brand for 10 million is what I wrote down.
Yeah.
You need to do this. You need this sort of revenue. You need this sort of turnover.
Yeah.
And you need this sort of profit. This is what your margin. This is what your margins need to be. This is the amount of lines. All this, like, just
reverse engineering from there. Yeah,
had to break it all down, and then, but Circular was a flop. So we got it wrong completely. So the whole model was wrong from the start. We wanted to sell £49 watches that cost 15, 16 quid. Sounds great, but then you've got to actually, you take your tax. You've got your operational costs.
Yeah.
You've got the cost per acquisition. All of these things. So we worked out. I think at that time it was okay. We could still make a profit on the first sale, but a fiver or something. But we wanted somebody to buy multiple watches and change the straps. Nobody does that. So it didn't, maybe the Apple Watch, but it didn't work at all. Nobody would do that. So we'd get one sale.
Who were you trying to sell to? You? Like, your young male brand?
I was trying to make watches fast fashion because that was my background.
Yeah.
So it's how do we sell volume of watches? Because I would study Hawkers. I don't know if you know the sunglasses brand. And Movement watches, which were they had a fantastic exit, and I would study them. They were Shopify brands and Gymshark at the time as well. Like Shopify plus one product plus social media marketing, basically.
Yeah.
That was the formula. And that was the whole strategy for everything I do in the brand builder plans. Email marketing was obviously included, but we'd look at that as a concept. So I did it with Cirque. Cirque wasn't profitable. Honu, because I'd come from a £4 million turnover, I wanted Cirque to be big, quick. And that was the wrong thing to do.
Mm.
I was focusing on building the revenue, making a big brand, losing money in the first year, all of that shit, which is just bollocks now. And it's been a lot of brands have been called out on it when they've floated. The Honu model was the complete opposite. How do we stay as small as possible so we don't have to pay VAT and we can pay ourselves out of the profits? And that was the Honu model. And that was great. That was so much fun when you'd pay an influencer and you'd get 10 times what you paid them. You'd be like, oh, it was just the best feeling. That was
starting to feel all the levers of the business. Why do you think, is it an ego thing that so many small brands chase top line aggressively as possible?
It was pure ego on my behalf as well. Yeah, like you don't think it at the time, but yeah, looking back, it was total. Yeah, and they do. They want to say I've done £1 million in a day or a month or a year or whatever they want to say. It's like there's always a figure that they're trying to put out. But the truth is, it's the profit that keeps the business alive, and that's the reason Crafted's still here.
Yes.
5 years. We've gone. It's always been about profit. Yes, we've grown and we've done well, but it's always been about the profit and making sure that we've got enough cash, working capital to pay everybody, buy more stock, and don't rip it apart.
We haven't. I mean, we haven't even actually got into crafted yet.
Yeah.
So right now we've got circular.
We're nearly there.
We've got Honu.
Yes.
Honu or Honu?
In Hawaii they say Honu.
Honu. Okay.
But everywhere else says Honu.
Okay. Honu. So, we'll stick to kind of local. So you got Honu.
Yeah.
But as you were telling me earlier, like crafted is the lion's share of your kind of house of brands, if you like.
Yeah.
Where did it start? By this stage, I suppose you've got a bit of confidence with Honu.
Exactly.
Where did the crafted story start?
We've got momentum, we're making money, and Honu's working. I started to share this whole, create a small brand, this whole like, so people that hate their jobs was the whole like kind of message. If you hate your job, leave your job and start a small brand to keep it under the VAT threshold, and you can maybe earn $5,000 a month instead of whatever your salary is. And it was that kind of message. So, and this was, there was like an undertone of freedom, which has been, so we were traveling because we had some cash now. So we were traveling around, and it was like, you can work from wherever you want, and freedom's more important than money and all this stuff, which is the value, which I still hold today. And out of that, people were listening on social media. Alex Canham, who's my business partner with Crafted, was one of those people who messaged me, asked to meet. We'd met to do, he was one of the influencers which was promoting circular at the time, so we hadn't met before, but he liked my views on freedom, he said, and had an idea for a business. And we'd obviously done women's jewellery with Honu, the men's jewellery concept with Crafted. But it was like Alex is obviously a model. He's an influencer at the time, and he actually had influence on people. So there was an audience there. And it was, I think he didn't like the fact that when he was away, he would wear costume jewellery or fashion jewellery or whatever, and it would fade.
Yeah.
Or go green when you'd go in the water and stuff like that. So he was doing a shoot in a pool. He wanted to wear the jewellery, but he'd have to throw it away afterwards. So he thought there was an angle for men's jewellery and that, and we were lucky with Crafter. I mean, there's a period of brand builder plans, but we'll just move on to Crafter. I think is we were lucky in the fact that we were right at the start of kind of men's fashion jewellery. Men's jewellery has been around forever, or my lifetime anyway. But there's no cool brands doing it at scale.
Owning yeah. But from what I understand, when you and Alex met at Yo Sushi, I think it was.
Yes, yeah, you know better than me.
It wasn't like a, you thought he was kind of asking for consultancy advice.
Yeah, no, so it was, think it was. So we met at Yo Sushi for Circular.
Yeah.
That was the first time we met. We had a beer, we had some food.
Yeah.
We then went into, so then we went to Nando's. I brought his daughter, Amila, and he was like, I'm thinking about starting this, like, in my head, this is how it kind of went. He was like, starting this brand, this is da da da. He's like, well, do you want to do it then? I was like, what? And he said, do you want to do this business with me? And I was like, oh, me? Like, I thought you were just after advice. Yeah. Let me work it out. How would we do that? And then when we just like started to piece it together, it was obviously a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we work really well together. We don't argue at all. And there's a good relationship from the start. Like, it's like a clear divide, which I think works really well with any business partner. It's like, he is obviously incredible at product and creative, whereas I was the operations, marketing, and now finance. And it would work quite well, because he would never go, I don't think you should run that Facebook ad. And I would never go, well, that product's minging. Like, it was never that. It was we would do it. I mean, our paths are crossing more as we've got bigger. Like, there's things which need to be intertwined. But I will, if he says, back me on this one, Danny, I'll never say no. Like, there's none of that. Like, there's no egos in the business, which is good. And he's better looking than me, so he can be the front man anyway. But it's worked really well. So from that point, I mean, we launched. So that was, say, late summer.
Yeah.
And we got to the point where we ordered some products. We launched with two products, which I'm really proud of. Actually, it was just a silver and gold. It's kind of like a dog tag sort of shape, but it's the logo. And it sold out. It was great. It was just, that was it. There was one product.
And this was mostly one product, two colors, through Alex's Instagram. Or
yeah, we didn't do any paid. Yeah. So learned a lot of lessons from Circular, spending too much on ads and paid and influencers, all that. So we used Alex's audience, his friends, and then we then planned the second collection.
And you sold out.
sold out of the...
Was that the plan? Was it kind of limited drop stuff at the beginning?
Or we didn't. It was more... I mean, we didn't really plan that. It was just... We just didn't buy enough. It was one of those. It was just... And then that helps by not buying enough because it looked like it was in demand. But it was, yeah, it was just we call it a signature pendant. And like I say, it's just the logo. There's a CDs that way, but it was that way like a dog tag. And that was it. And we sold them and... It's nice design. I still really like it. It doesn't sell as well as it used to, but I really like the design. And we saw even like other influencers had bought it. And there's a really good an influencer I properly respect called Ali Gordon. And he was just wearing it once. So I was like, that's brilliant. We've got one product. We've not sold that many. Yeah. So that it was just a good start. But I was doing the fulfillment. I was literally, so whoever ordered in those first, say, 100 orders, it was me in the box room of our semi-detached house packing them. And I hated it. So I would wait and put it off. Amy was doing her news. She was like, you've got to take them to the post office. And I was like, I'll put them on next day instead.
Yeah. So this is pre-3PL or anything? This is just...
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a photo I think I've seen you share before. Yeah. Like one side... That kind of holy stuff on one side, the crafted stuff.
I don't remember the exact date, but there was a summer and it was like 35 plus, and we were in there, all the doors open, all the windows open, fans, and it was so hot, but we were just fulfilling Honu. And because I had like, it's a square box room. Yeah. Amy had her desk up against the wall that way, I had my desk up against the wall there. We had a box here, which is where we threw it's literally
little packaging line and better, yeah. 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 Do you look back on those memories like incredibly fondly?
So happy.
Yeah.
Like, and that that's husband and wife doing that as well. Like, it's not.
I want to ask you about that later on, but that it's funny because a lot of the people that we've spoken to crave those early days where it was probably quite scrappy. They were hustling. You know, they weren't killing it yet, but it was kind of starting to gain a bit of momentum.
Yeah, I mean, the early days are fantastic. Don't get me wrong. Like, the money is a different league. It's much better than that from now. But like. Back then, I mean, you're doing everything. So you wake up and you've got a full day's work. So there's no like boredom at all. So, and you have to be disciplined. You've got to do it. Like if I wasn't going to the post office, which I didn't want to do, I was doing something in Facebook ads. But there's a story on the way to the post office so we could walk there. We'd have our bags, our like shopping bags, Honus and Crafted sort of thing. And we'd go past a restaurant called Gusto. And we'd go there and being a nice day, we'd drop off. That was the end of the day, say 4 o'clock or whenever the post office, maybe 3 o'clock. And on the way back, we'd go, let's get a drink. So we'd sit outside, nice beer, mojito, whatever, glass of wine. And there's a guy in there called Josh. He's still with us today now. I'll tell the story. I'll go away. But he would serve us the drinks and we'd talk business. And I was like, you know what? That's definitely a job for you. I don't know what it is yet, but it's definitely a job. He actually came on and did the brand builder plans for us to start. But I think that was a really good education for him because he was working behind the bar at Gusto, fantastic barman, amazing espresso martini. And he was looking with, and just a great personality. He was doing a law degree and then pivoted to marketing, but learned the e-commerce through doing the brand builder plans for people. There's a couple of people doing brand builders plans before we tried to make it a business. It didn't work out. Really good guy called Will was doing it. And he had a different vision for it. And we just decided not to do it. I think he wanted to take it one way and I didn't want to take it that way. As we ended up creating a lot of competitors for Crafted and Honu, we got people through the door saying, I want to do a jewelry brand that saves ants. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, well, come on, think of something.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a plan which I didn't want to sell, so it's a refund, whereas that was money for Will, which isn't fair for him, but it was a conflict of interest for me.
So how did you kind of had drop one, drop two, I think was the kind of 10 grand in 50 minutes job, which I suppose suddenly at that moment you know that it's real and you know that it actually, you know.
It was that drop, the second drop. So obviously launched, going back to Crafted, sorry, we launched the signature pendant and that did well. That was in the, again, we launched a bad time, but it was towards the end of the year. And we went into the new year and we launched drop, it might have been drop one actually, where we did a compass pendant, a Saint Christopher and a crucifix, I think. Maybe one more, I think it was 8 products. I say with the signatures, but anyway, we launched those products and bam, it was 10 grand, 15 minutes. Cause we'd bought more this time. And that I'd not seen anything before in my world. And it was the old live dashboard. You're watching it. It was, I think we launched at midday, 12:15, 10K. It changed to a K. I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And I was like, Al, are you watching this? It was like, wasn't on his phone. Wasn't doing the same as I was like staring at him. And like, he was like, why, what have you done? And I was like, 10K. He's like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's when we had a little moment. We knew.
What do you think it was? Like, was it the kind of culmination of loads and loads of right decisions? Or did you think you got that product market fit? Absolutely bang on.
Definitely product market. We got the price point right. We had the right audience. We had the creative right. We had the operation right. We had the email, the pre-launch. Yeah. Right. We had people signing up to it, early access, which was 12. All of that, everything was done perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was years.
Culmination of all that agency stuff, the previous two brands,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and obviously Alex's skill in picking the right products. And how it looked, we looked cool from the start. We looked like a good brand from the start, creatively. I think it's hard to, I mentioned it on another podcast. It's about a style. I think a lot of people care about brand and they think like brand in terms of how they look or the color schemes or branding. Whereas what we seemed to crack was style. We would have a person and people would be like, I want to look like that person. Like Represent have done it phenomenally well. And Colebooks, and they've done really good. You can see that there's a style that people want to follow. They want to dress in that way and look that has a certain look. As I think we got that right. We did with the first people to do this layered chain sort of look. I think that's played a big part for us along the whole way, the style, how we look. It's hard to describe what it actually is, but it's a look, I think, and
I think the thing I'm most interested in is that it's obviously a pretty big step or a giant leap from over here on the one hand, 10K, 15 minutes and a really nice style to kind of 5 years later doing 20 million bucks of turnover and a decent profit line. Talk to me about everything that kind of goes on in between that, because it is product market fit, but there's a lot of back end stuff that goes into creating not maybe a successful brand, but a successful business. Yeah. Talk to me about that.
We have hired really well. We've got some incredible people. So we might have a small team, but it's a really good team. So there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of people that will work to get the result rather than just work to leave and go home. I think that's one of the big parts there. We've had a lot of people who haven't worked in the e-com industry and come in and learn the ropes, but have natural intelligence and have been able to adapt to things. We have scaled through data. So we look at data. We don't necessarily launch a product just because we think we should sell that product. We'll launch it because there's high demand or there's upcoming demand. So we'll look at those sorts of things. We kind of operationally set up as a marketing company that sold a product rather than a service. So email marketing, advertising, I've always done the Facebook ads myself. We've now hired in that role and it's doing slightly better, but a lot better. So I held on to that at the start. So we could move quick in the early days. And I think we've been able to get not all product right, but we move through stock so quick that we don't hold. It's very rare that we'll launch something that we sit on. It's happened once or twice. We don't do sales, so we maintain the margin. We do sales, but not as many as it's not a fast fashion brand, it's not one every week. We sell out of stock, so we have exclusive and commercial lines, so things which we'll buy smaller, because we don't want them to be mainstream, and then we'll have stuff which we do want to be mainstream. What we've ended up with is people which have come in with marketing knowledge or been marketers that have developed into good retailers. And I think that's kind of where the business has gone in the last 2 years. We've actually got really good at retail. So we're trying for 100% availability. So instead of being out of stock, we'll do pre-sale. So you can buy it, but it's coming in a month and things like that. But there's certain legislation you have to follow to make sure that you can't take someone's money, all that sort of stuff. But it's having the availability, because we might get the amount we're spending on advertising. Someone will come to the website, see something, it's out of stock, they might never come back because they've never got any stock. So we try and capture as much of that as possible. So we looked at all the gaps. Where have we gone wrong in previous years? How do we fill that gap? Let's say we do 30 launches a year. What was good? What was bad? Was a single product a good launch? Was it a bad launch? And if a single product in February was a bad one, we'll try and do a 10 unit collection launch in February and see if that's the difference. Or is it just a bad time to launch something and we bump it somewhere else? We've got previous data that we can go and look at. So I think in summary, we've gone from being good at marketing and not amazing at retail to being really good at both. I think that's created our 23, which is an amazing year for us, way, way bigger than we predicted. So I think that's what's created the growth.
It sounds to me like it's a story of like incremental improvement.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll ask you now, and maybe you haven't mentioned it, but when you look back on it, these stories are often about moments, like big moments that kind of could have swung both ways. Were there many of those being crafted where you think, you know, if I hadn't have made that decision or whatever, it could have totally swung the other way and it might not be where it is today? Or do you think it's just been this incremental improvement year on year on year?
I actually think it's neither. I think one of the main reasons is that we're really disciplined.
Yeah.
So we do the boring things over and over and over. We don't. There's been times where we've gone, let's put our foot down and try and grow, and we haven't. It's not resulted in double the revenue, double the profit, sort of thing. It's been more. We've increased and we've had to do it for some sort of like you can use if you. So something I've learned in the last 12, 14 months is to be a better sort of. With my finances and understand the finances better, because we've never had a cash flow problem, never needed debt. We've had no outside investment, but there's times when the bank's lower than it should be. Why? What's happened? And it's been when we've not managed certain areas. Like sometimes you would spend less for efficiency, so you make more profit, but there's other times and you'll spend more for revenue because you need to fill cash flow because you've got bills from the previous quarter.
Yeah.
And you can use that to your leverage. So we have incredible cash conversion cycles. We have an incredible relationship with the supplier. During COVID, they couldn't scale quick enough. So I fronted them 100,000 to build their infrastructure because I knew we were going to work with them. We've got a good relationship with them anyway. So from that point there, I said, we'll do this. We'll help you grow your warehouse, your team, but we want great terms. So we got good terms and prices come down, all that sort of stuff. So we've got, from the moment we order, we don't pay. We've then got, obviously, if we do pre-order, we're getting some of that cash
up front,
working how it all falls. We then would sell the product when it's in stock. We're not all this time we're advertising on Facebook, we're not paying those bills. It's like there's a really good conversion cycle which has been built. And that, I mean, the best thing that Crafted is a fantastic cash flow business. It could be more profitable. It could be way bigger in revenue, but we've got it in a place where it's like almost no stress at all. It might be stressful for some of the guys when there's a launch and then we've got to cram everything in the last 15 minutes. But I'd say in general, the mental health at Crafted and the other brands too is high.
I want to ask you about this because you seem like for a guy that's running a 20 million pound a year business, you seem pretty chilled.
Yeah.
And you speak a lot about this.
And it's a Monday, actually. Yeah.
It's a Monday afternoon. Yeah. And it, you know, you speak a lot about this balance and traveling a lot and feeling inspired. And, you know, you tell me the story about Amy and, you know, on the beach in Mexico coming up with the whole new idea. And I know you like to travel in the Far East, etc. Like, talk to me about your views on this and why it's so important for you to travel, to be inspired by lots of different places, cultures, etc. But also, like, how do you keep so level-headed? How do you keep, you know, that kind of low stress level?
Work, so it's a bit of my DNA, really, from my working life. It's like, I've gone from working till from when you wake up till you go to sleep with the agency. And that was just, there's a picture of me going for my 30th birthday, going to Dubai, and I'm pale, black, rings under my eyes. I look ill. And that was lack of sleep, high stress, fighting with the board constantly, just all of that is just like, that is just not work. That is just toxic. It's just not a good lifestyle. So I wanted to create an environment where there is no shouting and pointing fingers and bitchiness. And if you think that like you break down the view on business, what, why do we go to work? We want a sense of purpose. We want a sense of achievement. We're all pulling together to get to a result. So what matters in between and how you end up getting to that result is, it's kind of irrelevant as long as the result is hit. So you could look at like an Alex Ferguson type thing where it's by force and by fear.
Yeah.
I don't think that works anymore. I think like you could put Alex Ferguson in the dressing room, but players would leave. It's different now. You have to be different. So you look at what people want, and COVID's threw everything in the mixer, but like, so people have dogs, they have kids, they have the gym, they have all sorts of different personal things that they want to do that make them feel better and improves their mental health and makes them feel and makes them work better, makes them achieve more things. So why would you get in the way of that? Like, I understand if you have a restaurant, there's working hours, you have to do those things. It's not relevant for everybody. But in our world, if somebody starts work at midday or starts work at 3 a.m. and the task that needs to be done is done at whatever time they choose, why does it matter?
Yeah.
And that's why, and we have a very, very tough time, and our CMO, Natalie, I've spoke, let's get an office. And we don't need an office. Let's get an office. We don't need an office. It's like, she hates it. She will not talk to me about an office anymore. Because for me, like we've got a brand. I'd, there's a long way to go, but I look up to the Gymsharks and Represents and like the brands, and they've got these massive offices and gyms in them and podcast studios. Yeah. And you're like, that'd be cool. Cause that'd be great for creating content.
Yeah.
So one thing we don't really have is a bit behind the scenes. Like we have some, which we do on shoots, but you need that environment to create that, I think. And I'm like, right, let's do it. We'll buy a unit. We'll own it, sit on the balance sheet for us, and we will kit it all out and we'll make it a crafted building. And I think that's great. And then I think, fuck, I'm not going to go there every day.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
It
locks you down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think what your kind of mantra in many senses is like, you don't want to be locked down. You want to be free. You want to be able to kind of move without any, you know, any places that you're fixed to.
Exactly. So we've got a HQ, and every Wednesday we meet up, and there's some structure to that. So there's like 3 meetings. It'll be brand marketing, performance report, weekly performance, and then just like general like social media or some product related stuff. But we all get together once a week, and that's what we do. And that works. We call it HQ. We don't call it an office. I think we need to upgrade that. So I think that might happen this year, where we do something a bit bigger, and we, you know, it's an hour for some people. I think it's geographically we locate it where it's half an hour from everybody. So I think we'll do that. But we have people that, I mean, one girl is from Latvia. She works in Latvia. We have people down south. We've had somebody working for us in Mexico before. Like, you don't get, if you try and get your talent from just one area, you'd miss out on all these other people. And it's not about like wages. Everyone would be paid whatever the fair wage is in our country. It's not their country. It's all done correctly. It's just, I don't think there's a solution. It's very complicated. I don't think there's a solution to the modern office or the modern physical workplace or whatever you want to call it. There's just hybrid and whatever suits the business, I think. In our world, if you have a service business, you need to be in the location. So I think that's kind of where we've got it. But we're in a place where we like to give people as much freedom as we can, as long as the results. There's been people that have worked for us that haven't worked out because they haven't got the discipline to work for themselves in their own environment. And that's a big thing. You have to be proactive. You have to be able to get up and go, right, I need to get here. How do I get here? You can't, you know, if you can't do that, you will struggle in a culture like ours. But we've had so much feedback from the team. They're just happier from where they've come before. And I think if you're happy, like, it's a bit airy-fairy, but if you are happy, you will produce a cycle. Yeah,
isn't it?
You'll produce better results.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I think that's why we get good results, because our team want to work. They're happy to work. They enjoy work. They work in better quality productivity hours than spread and staring at the clock or whatever it is that
other people might be doing. I think one thing I want to ask you is that I suppose a lot of people that are starting brands, small business, etc., would look at Crafted, would look at Brand Builder and say that's That's the pinnacle. That's where I want to get. That's where I want to get to. What motivates you now going forward? You know, you've got the brand, the high street recognition. You walk around the street and you'll see people wearing your product, totally unbeknownst.
Like that's still
that's, that, that's mad, right? Yeah. That's mad. Why do you get up in the morning?
So the last 5 years are definitely different. I'm in a transition phase. I realized that it's my seventh year doing brand retail, and it was seven year rich thing, whatever. But it's like it was 7 years in the agency where I started to lose interest. I'm not losing interest now, definitely not. It's the opposite. It's more I feel baptized for like the next level of growth. So the whole strategy was build a brand that we could sell for 10 million quid. We are way past that. And now we've got there, it's like, well, actually, if we did sell Crafted, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
I've got something which gives me a great income, a great lifestyle. I've got a brilliant team that if we feel like launching something, we can launch something with the team. So we've got a platform. And it's, well, what does the next 5 years look like now? And it's been maybe 6 months of thought, like...
I'm self-discovery.
Yeah, like what's next? And I'm ready to go with this. I mean, the brand builder side, so we have investments. So the model's going, it's changed slightly in the form. It's not the operator as much. It's more an investment. Mm-hmm. And because what we're finding is the team can't work on multiple brands when there's a brand like Crafted that does require more. So it's got very big Crafted from where it was supposed to get. If we had 10 small brands, obviously like it would be different, but we've got one really big brand and then the other brand. So it's more what I've found with the other brands as well, like I feel like the economy's changed slightly. So the cost per acquisition is the highest it's ever been. It's going one way. Facebook ads are working a bit better than they used to, but still a lot higher than pre-COVID. But even after, like it's just been going up. So the barrier to entry to start a brand today is a lot harder than when it was when I first started them, because you could literally get a Shopify account, pay an influencer, do some Facebook ads or Google ads, do some email, and obviously get a Me Too product, and then you wrap a brand around it and try and make it a niche. But it's very different now. I feel like now it's more about audiences, communities, having a product which suits those communities and growing from there. But it's more content based than it is advertising based. And that's very difficult because you have to be either a face of the brand and be really good at it, or a celebrity which is starting a brand. And we recently pivoted with Circular, and that is going to be incredible. The plans that the guys have got for this year for that is amazing. I'm really excited about it. So that's an example of a new model. So that what I would class as new e-commerce. So you've got Vicstar, who's obviously a wonderful creator, really funny guy, built an amazing audience. And now he's moving into e-commerce and created a brand which we had alongside. So we could have a couple of years head start on it. So we had a customer base. We had simple things, the business set up.
Yeah, of course.
So that's the sort of thing I believe I could do with Brand Builder. But I've got a very tricky decision because I can't do too many, because I am Brand Builder now, not an operating team. We have some people which you could do, but the truth is these brands perform so much better when they have their own teams, not one team working on, because that is an agency. You can't move that fast. So Circular will have its own team. It will obviously have things like finance you can do, and customer support potentially we could do. But when it comes to strategy and day-to-day marketing activity, you need your own team, I think. And that marketing activity is different. The reason why Crafted can continue doing what it's always done, the Facebook ads, Google ads, kind of D2C traditional stuff, is because I feel like we've got first mover advantage. We're a leader in the market. We've reached critical mass, I think. And that's very hard to replicate. And that's why I think it's probably the hardest it's ever been to start an e-commerce brand ever.
Do you have the same itch that you did to, you know, I suppose with Circular, it's not a totally new brand, but you know, it's kind of like phase two of Circular's life. Do you have the same itch that you did now that Craft It is where it is to go and start that small brand and hustle it out again?
I love it. So yeah, definitely. It's more, I've got to be careful about mindshare. So it would be a lot easier for me to add 5 million turnover to Craft It than it would be to create £1 million brands. Circular is completely different. Vic is so powerful. His audience is amazing. He's great to work with. Like that's where you could see real results with a D2C brand moving forward. You think Mr. Beast, Feastables,
Echoes,
Prime, like all of these brands, which are they're good products, but they're with an audience already. Then you attach ads, and then you attach email, and then you were like the secondary as before. It was product, brand, Facebook ads, and you could acquire a customer at 15 quid. Do you know what I mean? It was easy. Now it's, I mean, if you've got an AOV under 50 quid, it's seriously tough, and you don't have a famous face attached. So I think that's it. And I love the model of investment. So for me, my investments are wine. I've done some property investments and failed. I built a house, didn't like it, moved out. We bought some land, which someone said was going to be a fantastic one. And then there's obviously been a crash now. So I've just got a load of cash tied up there. So when I do things out of my zone,
yeah,
I don't like it for one, but I feel like I'm just not that great at it. So why would I do it?
Talk to me about wine investment. Where did it come from? It's an unusual thing.
Yeah, it's an interest. I like wine. It sounds like a really basic comment, but yeah, I love wine. I love everything about it. Like I love the stories that we're talking about, Pateks and APs, and how you have to be on a list and you have to buy their third best watch before you get the second best watch. It's the same in the wine industry. You could spend thousands on their third wines to move up to the second tier, and then you'll get one bottle of their top tier wine because it appreciates in value. The hardest part of the wine investment is getting the wine. If you could get a Nautilus and it was brand new, you get it and you could get it from the retailer, it's not been marked up, you know that was going to go up in price, and they know it and they don't want you to sell it. And I love the industry. Like I really like it. It's like if you're caught selling a Domaine Romani Conti, which Romani Conti, the producer, it's probably the most expensive Burgundy. It's one of the most expensive wines in the world. And their main one is called Domaine Romani Conti. If you're caught selling it in the first 3 years, they take your allocation away because they want you to have the wine because you love the wine, not to make money on the wine.
Is it an investment to, I've got no idea how much a bottle of this stuff costs, but is there, what's the temptation like to drink it?
Oh, well, this is the problem. Yeah, so this is the problem. So you could buy on Premier, which is the youngest you can buy the bottle. Say you were to buy a 2022 Domaine Romani Conti, might cost you 3,000 to 5,000 for the bottle. In 15 to 20 years time, that will be worth 25,000 for that. So you can get to that point. But at that point, you know you've got one of them, and to buy one is 25, but you've paid 3. You're going to... If you
create trade,
yes. If you're rich enough, drink it and enjoy it because that's what it's for.
Yeah.
If you're not, it's an asset to sell.
Has it taken like a while for your palate to appreciate the kind of different wines, etc.? Like, can you taste the difference between a £2,000 bottle of wine and a £5,000? Like, how does
it's not so much the people make that mistake about the price. It's not about the price. And there's some masters of wine and sommeliers which are way better than me on this sort of stuff. But I drink wine because I enjoy the whole, I just enjoy it as a drink. The best way to have the wine, I feel, is when it's two of yous and you've made some homemade bolognese and you have a super posh bottle of wine with that because you can enjoy it. It's one bottle, you're not sharing it with like loads of people and you're not having like five different wines, I find. Some people prefer it when they do like a horizontal or a vertical tasting, so where they'll taste the same wine in different years or they'll do different wines the same years. I just love having a wonderful bottle, which is, it could be a Tuesday or Tuesday night or something like that, and you just have half a bottle and you just really enjoy that wine and savour that. That's why I like it the best. But it's been a great investment because most of it is stored in the vineyards. I don't have any at home. I built a wine cellar in the house, but we didn't like the house, we moved. So we had most of the wine is stored actually in the vineyard as well. So I'll never touch that. I'll just go up in value. I've got a little slot in the vineyards.
So yeah, does it get insured?
They'll have insurance. Yes. Yeah. But these are domains like that have been around for like since the 19th century. So that, and that's a good way to do it because you probably won't drink them. I could go over and see them and all that sort of stuff, which I will get to. I've started mainly with merchants, so not direct with the vineyards, but I want the next move is to get reputation.
And that relationship.
Yeah, right. With the vineyards direct, because that's when you get the special stuff. Yeah. So that's when you get the things which you've never heard of. So this DRC, that'll be like, yeah, that's like our sixth best wine. You've not had literally the master of wine who's made it or something like the winemaker's specific wine, which he likes maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
The stuff without a label. Yeah.
I kind of want to end with like a couple of areas. The first one is that I want to speak to you about, you've got a bunch of businesses with a bunch of business partners.
Yeah.
One of those being your wife, Amy.
Yeah.
What's that been like? Has that been tough?
She's my main business partner actually, because she is equal on Brand Builder as a holding company. She's equal on the holding company.
Yeah.
Because we started it at the same moment. It was together, although I've because it's crafted, it's more the men's side. I've kind of gone more towards that brand.
What's that been like, having relationships with multiple business partners, all of whom I imagine have different strengths?
Yeah,
you might get on better with some than others.
Yeah.
Has that been tough or not?
Yeah, it's tough from a time perspective. Yeah. You'd want to give everybody the same respect that you'd want yourself in terms of if WhatsApp, everyone's talking in WhatsApp, but you're busy, you want to give people time and rather than just a quick reply, actually think about what you're replying to. I think that's the main thing. But I see the brands as my digital property. Instead of loads of houses, I see them as like digital property that way. So I think we own a house together, sort of thing. So like it's an asset that which we split. But in order for it, we have to. Have a good relationship. We have to nurture it for this asset to grow. I think that's, everyone's in the same boat. So everyone knows what we want. We don't really have squabbles or arguments or anything like that. It's more, I think when it's very clear from the start what role somebody is. So I do this and you do this. Yeah. And most of the time it's fallen in products and creative is one way and the rest is something. Yeah, because that's what I can do. It's more, it's the next wave of it, because we started with an operational team that looked after all the brands, and it's not going to work moving forwards because I feel the ecosystem's changed, the economy's changed, it's different now. You need in-house content staff, you need in-house marketing staff. Units like sending emails you could probably get through as a central operation. But I feel that the amount of storytelling required, you think of like the channels you should be putting content out on, TikTok.
Measure stuff like TikTok, the amount of content is going to be seen.
Instagram, even Twitter is a great social network. LinkedIn now, people, there's this new thing about staff being influencers. So like people are actually like talking about the business, sharing the business. We went on a brand marketing trip to so-and-so and how you did a pop-up in Paris, and all of these things are building the brand. There's no agency in the world that could do that. There's no central operation. Brand Builder could never do that. You need an in-house team. And this is where we've got to now think, because is a 50-50 fair for these people now with me? Should I have less? Because I've become the advisor, not the operator, maybe. I think that's a discussion. If I've put money in, then potentially not. But I think this moving forwards, if I do any more, it would be with someone who's got content creation, is a creator, has an audience already, ideally has a network with other people which have audiences, leverage that part first, validate the business that way, get enough data points in it so that you can start to do more advertising, Facebook advertising with event data, better event data, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Final question, because I know you're busy. Lastly, I want to thank you for your time, because I've really enjoyed this. All the businesses, $20 million in crafted last year.
It was more.
Even better. Yeah. Even better. What are you most proud of? Like, when you look back at the story today, what do you think? Do you know what I'm really bloody happy with?
I think it's working culture.
Yeah.
I know I could move to the Maldives tomorrow and we could still grow. And so could the team. We could all move to the Maldives.
That's incredible.
We would still grow. I think that is it's been taken from different companies that I've listened to, a lot of Tim Ferriss. There is a piece of software called Basecamp, and the people that write, I think it's Jason Fried and DHH, I can't remember his name, who wrote that book about it doesn't have to be crazy at work and rework and all these sorts of books. And they are right. I think they're right. For what we have, they are right. And I think that's the best thing. Try to think if there's any time zone things if we were in the Maldives, but it's more I think we could all work on different time zones and the business would still grow.
Incredible.
I think that's it.
That is amazing. Danny, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
And hopefully do it again soon.
Cheers, mate.